You're listening to the free edition of Sweden in Focus from The Local. If you would like to listen to a full-length version of the podcast, as well as an additional midweek episode, please check the episode notes for details on how to upgrade to Membership Plus. Here's this week's free edition.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to this special bonus edition of Sweden in Focus, the Local's news podcast. On Saturday, we had an interview with Diamant Salihu, the award-winning author of Tills alla dör, or Until Everyone's Dead, a book that shines a light on the roots of Sweden's gang crime problem. Diamant was very generous with his time, and since this is such a big issue and he had so much to say, we wanted to give you the parts of the interview that we weren't able to include on Saturday. So this time round, we'll talk about the central role of social media and gangster rap, how gangs are recruiting young children, why a younger generation suddenly finds itself in charge, why there are so many drugs and guns in circulation, and what can Sweden do to get the situation under control? Before we get to the interview, I just want to say that this podcast is made possible by members of The Local. So a big, big thank you to everyone who supports us. We're an independent publisher and your support really is what funds all our journalism. As a member, you get unrestricted access to all articles on The Local Sweden, as well as our 8 other country sites. And it might also be good to be aware that some of our newsletters are just for members, including the Inside Sweden newsletter, which comes out on Saturdays and gives you the editor's insights on the most important news stories in Sweden. If you're not yet a member but are considering joining, you can find a special membership offer for podcast listeners at thelocal.se/podcast offer. Let's listen now to the interview. One thing you talk about in the book is the rise of social media and what you call the attention economy. Can you explain what you mean by that term and how rappers have played a central role in the gang crime ecosystem?
Yeah, so if we take the conflict in Rinkeby as an example, there was also several rappers that were doing very well. At the same time as a conflict was escalating, these teenage rappers were becoming more and more successful. But they grew up in this area. They were friends or relatives with some of these guys that were carrying guns and starting to rob and shoot people. And they were also becoming a part of the problem. As more successful they became, they used these guys in their videos, in their lyrics.
They used the criminals in their
criminals,
videos.
Yeah. This gave the rappers authenticity.
Yeah.
And authenticity was what the audience was demanding, because they wanted to see or listen stories from this world that they were not part of at that time. Mm. There's a lyric from a rapper from Yasin and Jafar Bin from Rinkeby. I think it's from the early 2021. Jafar Bin has just recently been released out of prison, and then his friend Yasin, this is just before he gets arrested for kidnapping another rapper, yeah, Einar. And he enters in the video, Yasin, and says, you wanted this gangster shit, which was like a reference to the audience, because some weeks earlier he had released an album and people were harassing him on social media because it was too popish, not gangster enough.
Right.
So I think in this attention economy, they have realized that they can earn money on the music by being very authentic, but with the authenticity they have also starting to provoke each other through the music and use music as a weapon again. I mean, some kind of extra weapon aside what's going on the streets. Mm. there's a propaganda weapon.
Yeah, they almost become like recruiting tools for the gangs.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Yaffa Bean. There's one scene in the book where he's like publicly humiliated by the rival gang, and that becomes an incident that radicalizes him, and he becomes more and more aggressive in his lyrics.
Exactly.
I mean, that was the whole Einar thing, wasn't it? That he was publicly humiliated. Like they yes. kidnapped him, and then they sent they posted videos, I think, on Snapchat. Yeah, of him like I mean, tied to we maybe don't need to go into the details.
Yeah, after what happened to Jafar Bean from Rinkeby, this was in August 2017, other rappers knew that they didn't want to be in the same situation. And then many of the rappers were hanging around with criminals that are armed, which gave him some kind of protection from that kind of kidnappings or humiliations. But one that didn't have the same protection was Einar.
Yeah.
He was an easy target with much money, and that's why they could do that to him, what they did.
We've been reading that a lot of the incidents that have been happening over the last few months are connected to the killing of Einar in various ways.
Yeah, in a way, yes, because some of the targets of death shootings and explosions and so on have one thing in common, that they have been committing crimes against Einar. But I think also we have all to keep in mind that there's so many parallel conflicts in this environment, and especially the last weeks we've seen a huge gang conflict between two gangs. One of the gangs has also links to people that allegedly are the targets of what we thought was the Einar conflict.
Right.
So maybe they're linked somehow. We don't know that really yet, but all of these guys, this is a small community, even in the gang community. They know each other. They have so many parallel conflicts and loyalties and illoyalties.
Yes. And I watch the children's news with my own children, and I've seen you on there telling kids, you know, if older children start offering you gifts in exchange for services, tell an adult immediately, because otherwise you might end up dead. And this is obviously unnerving to hear as a parent. How common is it for gangs to use young children?
I said that because I really wanted to make a point, because it's dead serious.
Yeah.
And the children needs to realize that, and parents too, because I think parents are or have been quite naive, especially parents that live in the vulnerable areas. The older guys that are based in these communities, they need to have workers because they want to earn money by selling drugs, for example. And teenagers, young teenagers, are easy targets to groom, to let them do favors that gives you more money.
Yeah.
And they are also very naive. And as the situation is at the moment around Sweden, we have so many cases with child soldiers, I mean, children that are murderers.
Yeah.
I mean, they're carrying guns. And for example, in Malmö last year, there was this 15-year-old guy that escaped from a HVB custody. It's when he's like under custody. Escaped and committed a murder in front of a lot of witnesses. It's very ruthless, and also a huge problem, because the older criminals, they know that they can use the children this way.
And what sort of things are like, I'm thinking of children like 10 to 12 year olds, what sort of things are they being asked to do?
They're being asked to do favors, as can you take this package from here to there? Can you hide this in your parents' basement?
Sure.
Can you report when you see the cops coming? Well, I was on a meeting before this, and I met a woman there that works with an integration project, and she told me that they had 6-year-olds that were recruited to help the older guys in the gangs with drugs. 6-year-olds.
That is tragic.
Yeah.
It's really tragic.
Does it play in as well that these kids, if a 6-year-old is arrested, then, well, they're not going to be arrested, and they're not going to be sent to jail, and they can use them and then they'll be out on the streets again soon, and they can use them in that way as well?
Exactly, because here in Sweden, if you're under 18, the general punishment you can get, even if you commit a murder, is like maximum 4 years in youth custody. Where, I mean, it also works like a recruitment base where you meet other guys like you. And you can get to know people from all around Sweden.
Yeah.
And the teenagers know that. The older guys know that. That's why they are continuing to find young proteges.
as you mentioned, you've got a new book coming out soon in April. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it focuses on how police got access to the encrypted EncroChat messaging service used by Swedish gangs, among others, and how that led to gang leaders being tried and convicted. And this was obviously a huge success for the police, but it also created a vacuum. And to what extent do you think the spike in gangland killings last year is linked to a younger generation moving in to fill the void?
According to, interviews are done with police, with the guys that have been sentenced and the guys that are still on the run. It's a very big reason.
Yeah.
Because when the leaders got to prison, then the young guys became leaderless, but they still had guns and they still wanted to earn money on drugs.
Yeah.
But they had also found out a lot of information through the encrypted chats, because here in Sweden, everything becomes official when you prosecute somebody.
Right.
So they can see that this guy and that guy had some kind of relation with each other. They were changing information. I thought they were enemies. A lot of gossip has led to shootings. I have an example in my book where also a brother of a guy that was planning crimes through EncroChat got killed. A couple of days after his brother was prosecuted.
Mm.
And according to the family, it's because of what they was reading in the chats. But yeah, the main consequence was that so many young teenagers have now been leaderless and living wild.
Yeah, you've described it as a Wild West scenario at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. One noticeable trend, as we were discussing a little bit earlier, was the fact that many of the gang-related murders last year took place outside the main cities in places like Kalmar, Helsingborg, Luleå. And a lot of the recent explosions and shootings in Stockholm are thought to be connected to the illegal drug market in Sundsvall. Why is the violence spreading geographically like this?
Because police are, they have the more vulnerable areas under watch, and there is a huge market in the rest of the country where the gangs know that they can take over and sell their products, and they can kill the competitors if they need to. So what we're seeing now is that kind of battle between two gangs, and one of the big markets that they want to take control over is in Sundsvall, in northern part of Sweden, allegedly, because Sundsvall is like the port to the rest of the northern parts of Sweden, but also to our neighboring countries. So there is so much drugs being smuggled into Sweden that there are leftovers for Norway and for Finland. And obviously, this is very interesting for the gangs, so they can earn money.
And in your first book, you talk about these two gangs we've mentioned, Shottaz and Dödspatrullerna. How many gangs are active in Sweden at the moment?
I wonder if anybody knows, really. When you say gangs in Sweden, they don't necessarily have a name. But only in Stockholm alone, the police say that there are around 50 criminal networks.
Right.
Most of them are like based around city centers, they have their own areas.
Yeah.
And they can be friends or enemies with each other.
We talk a lot about organized crime. How organized is it? Are there some gangs that are very organized, others less so? What kind of organizational structures are we seeing?
Many of them are not organized, which is also part of the problem, because they kill each other and they're very young. If they would be more organized as they are for example, in Germany, they would not be allowed to kill each other because that's bad for business.
Yeah.
So somehow, if it would be more organized, it would maybe lead to less killings, but worse problem for the Swedish society. Yeah. But there are also some of the gangs that are very organized, and they have a potential, capacity to take over if they want to take over. So we'll see what happens after this gang battle that we're seeing right now.
When you say take over, what do you mean by that? Do you mean to take over other gangs or sort of move into society, sort of undermine society as a whole?
And move into new areas, but also build alliances with other gangs. It's like, to make it easy, it's like having two teams in the Premier League, and then you have a team that is on the first place at the moment and one that is maybe on the fifth place. Which team would you like to play with if you are a soccer player?
Right.
I think it's easy to understand it that way, because now we see young teenagers from all around Sweden doing jobs for either team.
Mm.
I think because that they're showing some kind of strength in this kind of radical world,
yeah,
that makes them more attractive. And they also have rappers that also advert in their music videos and on their social media loyalty to either gang.
Yeah.
Which way makes it even more complicated. But I think that the risk is that one of these gangs or teams can become even bigger if the police doesn't succeed to arrest people and convict people.
Yeah. The new government has gang crime prevention at the top of its agenda. It wants to allow stop and search zones and anonymous witnesses, for example. And it has talked about opening new youth prisons, deporting criminals who are not Swedish citizens, building more prisons and hiring prison places overseas. Will any of this help? And how do you see this situation developing over the coming years?
I mean, I think it's an agreement also among researchers that you need to incapacitate young criminals.
Yeah.
So when they're most active, that they need to get out of the streets. And now we see young teenagers committing murders, explosions, and so on. So they need to be somewhere where they can get the proper treatment when they're very young. When I speak to old criminals that are in prisons and ask them about what they think would be the best way, they say that it's not the best thing to mix teenagers with adult criminals, because that might lead to even more recruitment. But obviously, they need to be behind bars somewhere else, maybe for a longer time until they grow up and realize that they can't kill each other like this. What the solution is for this problem, I don't have a clue. But I think that there are visitationszoner, the
stop and search. Yeah.
Stop and search zones. I have never spoken to a police officer that thinks that is necessary, because they can already do that kind of stop and search. They can find a reason anytime.
Yeah, and you talk about it in your first book. It happens in Rinkeby all the time and leads to a lot of resentment.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So is that more of a that's more of a political statement? It's more of a way of getting votes than perhaps
that's
a practical solution.
That's political bullshit. To be honest, because, I mean, if they would listen to the police officers and, I mean, if they would understand the situation we have here, they would not put so much energy into that.
What about anonymous witnesses?
Seeing there, how often is that used in other countries?
Mm.
Maybe that can give some kind of insurance to people that are very afraid. That is a possibility, but that can also be very questioned by the lawyers,
exactly,
defense lawyers. But I mean, they need to do something. We need to do something. We cannot have this situation. If you compare to UK, the UK had, I think, 35 death shootings during 1 year, and I think around 20 or so were gang related.
Yeah.
Then there are a lot of stabbings instead. That's another problem. But at least, I mean, I think there are so many different things we can do that can at least decrease the death shootings.
Mm.
How come there are so many guns in circulation, though? Are there any measures that are being taken that you can see are helpful? Is there anything that could be done to take more guns out of circulation so they don't have the means to shoot each other to this extent?
I mean, one way is to make even tougher penalties for those that are carrying a gun, but also, I mean, do something with the smuggling. The biggest route is Östersundsbron. And I mean, when I speak to those working there, they say that there are too few. They cannot do their job properly.
Mm.
And a lot of the drugs and also the guns can easily enter Sweden.
So they're coming across the bridge from Denmark on the motorway or on the trains?
All the way from the former the Balkan countries or other countries where you can buy start guns and modify them here in Sweden. But
is it true that, I mean, I was told that one of the reasons Sweden has such a big problem with guns and grenades as well is because some of the people who came from the former Yugoslavia, and a lot of it is weapons left over from those conflicts. Is that true? Probably a bit simplistic.
Yeah, a lot of guns have their origin in former Yugoslavia, yes. And that also raises another question. What will happen in a couple of years with all the guns that has been sent to Ukraine? I know the police officers that are very worried about when they will see the first very, very dangerous weapons coming back here through organized criminals. Yeah. Have you thought about that?
That's terrifying. Absolutely terrifying.
Going back to the Ursins, bro, like my purely anecdotal evidence from going to Denmark and back, even on the train, is like one in 20 times you'll see a police officer with a dog going up and down the train. And then you get into Sweden and there's just like a little door at the first stop in Sweden. And it just says, press this button if you have something to declare.
Yeah.
Like it's really not the same as when you're flying in. It's just, you can just walk in. Yeah. I can definitely see how people smuggle stuff in over that bridge.
Yeah. And when I speak to all these criminals, they say that, I mean, the risk is very low and the reward is very high. So that makes sense.
Can I ask a question about your EncroChat book? Because I did a story on one of the cases in Malmo, the sort of revenge killings for Caroline Hakim, the doctor who was shot. And what I found so interesting is that you saw that the people that you thought were behind the murders, who are these kind of groups based in the suburbs of Malmo, who you saw as the gangs, were actually being controlled by people who were in their 30s and 40s and didn't live in that environment at all and were just running it. You know, they had, one of them had a flat in Turning Torso and then a flat in Barcelona. And I wonder if that's the case in other parts of Sweden, that you realise there's this higher level who aren't these sort of street kids like the people in Shottaz and Dödspatrull, but are actually, you know, relatively wealthy and living in a villa somewhere in a relatively well-to-do part of the town. Is that a pattern you've seen elsewhere? Because it was definitely the pattern in this case in Malmö.
Yes. I mean, the encrypted telephones has made it possible for criminals that have enough money to just order the killings like that from abroad, lying in the pool or sitting in a bar and telling people what to do in Swedish suburbs, young teenagers. I mean, that's is what's happening even now. Even though there's been a lot of people arrested, there are those that are not arrested that are trying to take over this market now. Some of the guys are in Turkey at the moment because Turkey doesn't extradite anybody to Sweden. I did a story quite recently there when one of the wanted guys for narcotic smuggling, he described Turkey as a gangster's paradise. And one of the main characters in this ongoing battle about Stockholm and Sundsvall market, he's called the Kurdish Fox, and he is based in Turkey. He has invested in citizenship. He is a Kurdish investing in a Turkish citizenship. And according to the police, ordering explosions and shootings from there.
We're sitting today in Hammarby Sjöstad, which is a lovely part of Stockholm with very expensive flats. And in your first book, there's a kid from Rinkeby called Khaled, I think.
Yeah.
And he comes to Hammarby Sjöstad and meets like a typical Swedish dad. I think you call him a super Svensson, with like blonde hair, who goes out walking with a stroller with his baby in it. And he's got like baby socks full of drugs that he gives to Khaled to sell.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, at that time when I wrote that book, I was so skeptical to everything Khaled was telling me. I was like, can that be true? And then he was telling me that he could sell 200 grams of cocaine during like 2 days.
Yeah.
I mean, I did fact checks. I went to friends, other sources that I know have been using drugs or selling drugs. And I was like, can this be true? This much drugs?
Yeah.
And then the EncroChat and the Anam and Sky EC came, and there you could read that these guys are bringing in like 158 kilos of cocaine during some weeks. Yeah. There's so much drugs coming into Sweden, and the police officers that I've been interviewing, they said that before, I mean, like 10 years ago, they could say that they were in a kilo club.
Yeah.
If they, I mean, this club was not so, they didn't have so many members. But now nobody speaks about kilo clubs because that's so common to get 1 kilo of drugs, which also says something about what's been happening in Sweden just during the last decade.
It's funny. It makes me think of our guest we had last week. We had Andreas Cervenka in, who was talking about his book about how many billionaires Sweden has produced over the past couple of decades. And it sort of reminds me a little bit about that. It was so unusual 2 decades ago to be a billionaire in Sweden, but now there are 542 of them. And now there's just so much drugs in circulation that it's become very commonplace.
Not that it's necessarily the billionaires who are taking the drugs. No. And they haven't got rid of some of them, maybe. But that is an interesting question. When it comes to the drugs trade, is it, I think Stefan Löfven, the former prime minister, made a point of saying, you know, the drugs are being consumed in the posh areas of Stockholm and they're causing the problems in these gang-ridden areas of Stockholm. Was that a correct analysis, or are the drugs also mostly being consumed where, you know, in these areas that have the troubles, or is it just everywhere?
Everywhere. Everybody that buys a gram of cocaine or cannabis should know that their money is being used to buy the bullets and the guns that are killing people in Stockholm.
The pricing is different, right? So it's sold cheaper in the suburbs than it is in, say, Östermalm,
yes,
and central Stockholm.
But everybody is using drugs. There's a huge market. I've been to meetings for stories I've been covering. Anonymous cocainists. Cocaine Anonymous, it's called, by the way. And I'm so surprised in those meetings what people I see, because there can be hooligans, there can be homeless people,
yeah,
and people coming direct from the finance district, and they have the same problem, addiction to drugs. And that's really important to realize that this is a problem that we're all part of.
Yeah,
I mean, the government in Copenhagen is wanting to legalize the use of all drugs. The city government, they've just agreed they want to request that as a trial. I mean, do you think that could work, or would that just be a disaster?
I don't know.
I can't see Sweden ever doing
no,
that.
Sweden will never.
I'm not sure we will be there, at least in not the next decade. But I've asked the guys that I've interviewed, and girls that have been smuggling a lot of drugs to Sweden, what they think would be good solutions. And quite many of them say that legalization would be a part of the solution. I'm not sure.
If it's legal, then they're sold in shops, or they're sold by authorized dealers, then there's nothing for the illegal dealers to do, I guess. There's no
that will affect their market, but I mean that will maybe open a new market for something else.
Yeah, I was just thinking that they'd find someone else to exploit, something else to sell.
Yeah, there will always be people wanting to earn money on other ways, illegal ways, so when they don't want to study or have a day job.
Mm. Yeah. God, intractable problems,
but
insolvable
I think this is really a side of Sweden people are surprised by. Like, I didn't really know that much about this side of Sweden before I moved here. You know, I lived in Denmark, I'd heard the kind of, oh, you know, Malmo's really dangerous, don't go there, or you're going to get blown up. I was like, oh, come on. Like, it's a sleepy little town in the south of Sweden. It can't be that bad. But, like, depending on where you go, depending on, like, you know, hang out with the wrong people, you get involved in the wrong kind of thing, it can be seriously dangerous. And I think it's just kind of shocking that, I don't know about you guys, I've kind of just got used to the fact that, you know, I'll log in a work day, I'll check the news, I'll be like, oh, another death here. I'm like, yeah, okay. Fine. Yeah, that just happens now. It's just standard. And I think this is just so surprising.
But so many people in the rest of Swedish society are kind of insulated from this as well because of how geographically isolated this is. Right? Mm.
It has been very isolated before, but now it's, it's happening even here where we are right now.
You're right.
I don't know if it's because I'm 40 rather than 20, but my personal experience is drugs come up so much less often in Sweden than they did in London. You know, in London, almost any party you'd go to, in my 20s, there would be people using hard drugs. I mean, it just happened all the time. It was everywhere. And since I was a teenager. And I don't think that's the case for most Swedish teens. So I wonder who's using all these drugs that are coming in, that, you know, these kilos and kilos of cocaine.
Yeah, so everybody is using these drugs. And I mean, when I've been in UK and in different European countries, I've also noticed that it's much more common, at least in a visual way, to see that people are using drugs on nightclubs, for example. But now I see that it's getting more normal here too in Sweden. The difference, I would say, that we have from other countries is that we have this deadly gun violence, which is harder to explain, because we have all the same problem, but why are we having so much deadly shootings in Sweden? And I think that an answer to that problem is that we have so much guns, that we have so much unorganized criminal network.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
I think that if, I mean, with time, I'm afraid that some networks will grow stronger and take over the market, and that might lead to less shootings, less deadly shootings, but more infiltration into our society from the criminal organized crimes.
Are we seeing much of that infiltration already?
Yes, we're seeing that infiltration, but more in some cities like Södertälje, Botkyrka. But that will be more common in other cities too. Mm.
And when you say infiltration into our societies, I mean, do you mean potentially these gangs getting even political influence at a local level?
Exactly, political influence, having special skills through bank contacts that can help you launder money, for example.
You're talking about the risk of us sort of eventually becoming a sort of a mafia society at some level.
I mean, in the Netherlands, they describe their country as narco-state 2.0. We're not there yet. I mean, there they kill journalists, they kill lawyers, and we're not there yet. I think we are on narco-state 1.0. But if we don't do something about this situation in 10 or maybe 20 years, we also might be narco-state 2.0.
In terms of the political aspects of this, how do you think this has been this has been treated by the political parties? How has the political debate handled this?
Shitty, to make it very clear, because for many years talking about this problem was too much associated that you would blame every immigrant in this country instead of just talking about the problems that we have. Because it's not me and you that are mostly affected by the deadly shootings or the explosion. It's mainly people living in vulnerable areas that want to have a decent life, that want to have a good future for their children, and they are the ones being affected. And that should have been what we should have talked about for a long time ago, instead of now realizing that this is a huge problem when it gets closer to everybody else. Mm. But it's already very late. Mm. And now we have to turn this situation around, and this will take many, many years, and we've lost maybe 10 years without no reason, just because we didn't want to...
To play into the hands of the Sweden Democrats.
Exactly.
Yeah. And now the shootings have arrived in Hammarby Sjöstad, where Einar was actually killed, where we are sitting right now. He was killed around the corner from where we're sitting now. If you thought they were in the suburbs now, they've actually arrived.
They've arrived, and they have spread like a fire to many other cities, and... And now we have to deal with that situation way too late, according to me.
Hi, And that brings us to the end of this bonus episode of Sweden in Focus, featuring more from our interview with Diamant Salihu. And we have a write-up of the interview that we'll link to in the show notes. This podcast also featured the locals James Savage, Richard Orange and Becky Waterton. Our sound engineer is Rhys Edwards. I'm Paul O'Mahony, and we'll be back again on Saturday with a regular episode of the podcast. Until then, take care. That's all for this week's free edition of Sweden in Focus. If you'd like to hear a full-length version of the podcast each week, as well as an additional midweek episode with more interviews and analysis, please upgrade to Membership Plus. Make sure to check the episode notes for details on how to upgrade. Sweden in Focus is a podcast by The Local Europe. Our sound engineer is Rhys Edwards. The publisher is James Savage.